from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. How you doing?
I'm great. Wait, I heard, did Heather B. say it was 88 degrees down there?
Did I say 88? I meant to say 66.
I was going to say not 88.
I was being a little extra hopeful, I guess, G.
Oh, I was getting ready to say, I started sweating when I heard that. I said, why is that hot?
Are we even going to get anywhere close?
I don't think so. We're looking at maybe 81 today. Okay. Sorry about that. 86 is possible on Thursday. See, I was looking ahead.
Okay, there you go.
Okay. Is 88 too hot, Ursula?
88 is about the max for me anymore.
You know, I think 88 is fine if you're on a beach with some with a drink with one of those little umbrellas in it.
Yes.
Then 88 is okay.
Exactly. Gotcha. Exactly. Any more, right. 78 is perfect. 78.
Yo, which is we're going to be
right about this week.
Agreed.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get to it. Ursula's top five news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Defense Center.
We need more cops. That message from Seattle Police Chief Adrian Diaz in the wake of this weekend's shootings that left at least five people dead and several more injured just since Friday.
I'm down a remarkable number of officers and I have a reduced and restricted budget. I'm having to make tough choices where essentially my hands are tied between having enough officers respond to multiple scenes of violence across the city and having officers staff special events and other low-priority events.
Mayor Jenny Durkan says the city cannot afford to continue losing officers. More than 200 have left in the past year and a half, and she blames it, in part, on the city council's calls to defund the department by 50%. The mayor also touted recent measures that the city has undertaken as a community-driven response to gun violence.
We have to take guns off the street through SPD and other federal partners and other programs. We have to invest in community-led solutions. We have to create a support system for young people at risk of gun violence.
Police were already responding to a deadly shooting in Belltown early Sunday morning when they got another call about a mass shooting in Pioneer Square, and someone recorded the scene outside the Trinity nightclub and posted it on TikTok. That was a lot of shots fired, obviously. There was also a shooting in Lake City on Sunday night and another one at a homeless camp in Yesler Terrace.
Today we're going to have the chief on at 11 o'clock, and I'm looking forward to that and asking him questions. I'm gracious that he's going to be coming on, Seattle Police Chief, going to be coming on to our show. And Ursula, there's so many angles when it comes to why this is happening, right? And yesterday when we spoke and talked on the show, there were a lot of people who have given their opinion as to why this is happening. And I said then, and I'll say again, a lot of you are right. A lot of the reasons, there's so many reasons. There's lack of support, there's lack of communication, leadership not on being on the same page, there is mental health, there is coming out
not
of the
enough
pandemic,
accountability.
There's not enough accountability, not enough police officers, bad messaging about defunding the police. Every single one that's come through, I'm not saying you're wrong. Now, with all of the reasons why it's gotten there, in order to prevent, now this is the key part in this, right? In order to prevent, because I'm sure that people that live in Seattle, that live in that area, or people that want to continue to come back to Seattle, and people that lead and have businesses in Seattle, they want things to be better, right? So if we want things to be better, we're going to have to learn how did we get here in the first place. That's important. The whole let's move on, I'm telling you, it doesn't work. So the next mayor that's going to be in office, it is going to be crucial for that mayoral candidate who is going to be the next mayor to really be able to lead and be able to keep and try to keep everybody accountable and all on the same page. Because if that does not happen, then we are going to be repeating what we are talking about right now in the future, Ursula.
Well, the lack of leadership, I posted a question on our Facebook page and asked everybody. So we're going to have the chief on, and we will be asking about the gang situation because I hear that there are a lot of people saying, well, we've got a gang war going on. Is this a gang war? The reason we're not calling it gang violence yet is because there were a bunch of different shootings. The investigations are underway, and I'm not going to be reckless and call it a gang shooting if I don't know that to be the fact. However, we will ask the chief about that. But what can we do as a community to help in this situation? A lot of people have just raised their hand. They're just saying, you know what? We can't do anything because we keep bringing in the same kind of leadership that ends up being a lack of leadership. So Cairo TV asked some of the mayoral candidates what their answers are. And this is Lorena Gonzalez, who is city council president. Obviously, she is one of the leaders in the mayoral race. And this is what she says.
We need investments in these community-based violence interruption programs that will get to preventing these incidents from occurring in the first place.
So she supports what the mayor has done in terms of, you know, asking for more money or throwing more money at these community programs. But she specifically says the answer is not to add police. Same with Colleen Echohawk.
The data does not show that more cops on the street make our streets more safe.
Former Seattle City Council member Bruce Harrell is in favor of adding cops.
More police are one of the solutions, but not just police officers as we think traditionally. Effective police officers, better police officers.
And what does he mean by that?
What we want to see are police officers that are out of the cars, building community trust.
Okay, and based on the conversations that I have with police officers that I know within the Seattle Police Department, they say these are the things that they used to do. But because of budget cuts, because of how they're stretched, because of the number of officers who have left, they can't do those beat cop priorities like they used to, where they would get to know people in the neighborhood, young people, before they, you know, so they can help kind of shape the pathway in which they go. Because we talk about violence interrupters. Well, I think when we used to have beat cops in every neighborhood, I think that was helpful. I think that could help, right? I mean, but those days are gone.
100%. And you know, of course, Chief Diaz is going to be on our show at 11 o'clock today, and we get an opportunity to ask him if there's a huge motivation for me to want to see the city of Seattle add more police officers, particularly for that reason. I want that. I want that in the communities, because here's what it does. As someone who grew, I mean, not only did I grow up, of course, my parents being law enforcement, but I also grew up with the beat cop, the community cop in that neighborhood. Not only what it does is that relationship with that police officer will help with kids and young adults, because sometimes these kids or young adults, their only interactions with police officers are when something happens bad, right? And growing up, for me and somebody else, maybe you out there listening, there were times that you used to get the lollipop from the cop. You used to talk to the cop. So it's easy to understand why someone looks at a cop and thinks, oh boy, something's bad. And whereas years ago, it wasn't that way. I am really motivated to get back to that point, to add money, to add more policing. And by the way, I don't want to see them add more money and not add more police officers. That's very important, Ursula.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I cannot stress the importance when we talk about, well, there's nothing we can do. Well, one of the first things you can do is vote, right? So we've got the primary coming up in a week from today.
Yeah.
Make sure that you look and you ask yourself, which of these candidates represents what I want to help make Seattle a safer city?
I do want to say I haven't talked to any city leaders, or this isn't coming from any cops from what I'm going to say, but I've talked to some people, and I am hearing that there is a gang war. There is for sure a gang war, and then there is potential retaliations that are happening over these last few days. So, again, that isn't corroborated by city official or police officer, law enforcement. That's one of those.
But do we know that in this case with these shootings from the weekend?
Yes. That's what I'm referring to. This.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I can't say all of the shootings, right? Because there's, you know, just recently last night there's a shooting in Renton, and you talked about the shots in Everett. So I can't say everywhere, but the ones, particularly the ones downtown Seattle, yes.
Okay. 8 county health officers are now officially recommending that everyone 5 and older wear a mask indoors, whether or not you've been vaccinated. King, Pierce, Snohomish, Kitsap, Clallam, Jefferson, Grays Harbor, and San Juan counties are all making that recommendation. Again, this is not a mandate. And just this morning, the CDC has now reversed its course and is recommending that fully vaccinated people wear masks again in indoor public settings where there are high coronavirus transmission rates. Dr. David Agus is a medical contributor for CBS News.
Because of the ease of spread of the Delta variant, masks are now going to be recommended. This is a change in guidance from as recent as last week, but certainly represents the infectious nature of the Delta variant. I think it is a positive step forward in that we have to stop spread of the Delta variant because it seems to be rising in numbers of new cases in almost every state.
I'm just making sure. I didn't know if it was done. So the recommendations, I'm going to still stay, and like you and I both agreed with yesterday, I'm going to stay with the recommendation part. Like, I don't know and really think that we're ready for this quote mandate. Now, just recently, I am starting to be a little bit more optimistic. And the reason why I'm being this way is because of what history has shown us when it comes to COVID. Usually over in Europe, usually when something happens there, then the United States is usually 3 to 4 weeks behind. And then whatever happens there will end up happening here. Well, the Delta variant was going on over there. It was kind of started over there. And then we started to get increased cases over here. I'm looking at this, Ursula, as glass half full and believe that the United States is going to be better with this with some recommendations. Maybe I'm naive, but that's where I'm going with this. And I'm especially thinking that way because my biggest concern were for kids who aren't able to get the vaccination, knowing that back to school is happening here soon.
Yeah, and I'm not as optimistic only because of the misinformation. I'm going to be fine. My family's going to be fine. We're vaccinated. We have jobs, you know, but I just worry for the people who are still struggling and who are still trying to do the right thing. And there are people who are being misled with misinformation mm-hmm. spread by people who make a ton of money based on that misinformation. And whether you like them or not, California Governor Gavin Newsom said something yesterday and expressed how I was feeling.
We are exhausted, respectfully. Exhausted by the ideological prism that too many Americans are living under. We're exhausted by the Ron Johnsons and the Tucker Carlsons. We're exhausted by the Marjorie Taylor Greens. We're exhausted by the right-wing echo chamber that has been perpetuating misinformation around the vaccine and its efficacy and safety. We're exhausted by the politicalization of this pandemic, and that includes mask wearing that has been equated to the Holocaust. It's disgraceful. It's unconstitutional. It's unconscionable. And it needs to be called out.
A Tacoma police commander has now been disciplined for not turning on his body camera when officers responded to Pierce County Sheriff Ed Troyer's confrontation with a black newspaper carrier in January. Lieutenant Robert Stark was given a letter of reprimand after this internal investigation found that he not only failed to wear his body cam, but he also didn't make sure that all the other officers on the scene had theirs activated. The Seattle Times got a hold of newly released records. Some of the officers were wearing body cams, but none of them had any recordings of Officer Chad Lawless's interview with Troyer. And as we've reported, the newspaper carrier has now filed a $5 million claim against Pierce County. The Attorney General has opened a criminal investigation, and the Pierce County Council is doing a separate investigation.
I would love for all of the officers that were present there with Ed Troyer during that time, I would love for all of those officers to be under oath so everybody can have an opportunity to ask them about what was said, the conditions of Ed Troyer during that time. I'd just be curious of that. I mean, we know the body cams were off. I would like for those officers to be under oath to answer those questions about that particular moment.
The thing that I found really interesting is that So Officer Lawless, who was the primary officer, he wrote the incident report. So he said he had mistakenly left his body camera on the charger at the substation before rushing out to the officer needs help call. And then his sergeant told the investigator that he failed to turn on his body camera because of operator error. And by the time he figured it out, he thought the incident had wrapped up. And then two other backup officers said they also left their cameras in a charging dock at the substation, but said they had no direct contact with either the newspaper carrier or Troyer during that call. And then the shift commander on the night of that call, who was reprimanded, he said, yes, he did violate the policy. And it was beyond the amnesty period because this whole body camera thing is kind of new for them. I want to believe, but this is where we talk about difficulty in believing. Should we believe that every single one of them just
made a whoopsie,
forgot?
Oops.
That's the hard thing. You know, what's that?
You listen to some say is everybody's just after Ed Troyer, you know. That's what the conversations are around. Like this whole conspiracy to try to go after him for some reason. But and like Chef just said, whoopsie. Yeah. Well, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Well, I was gonna say for what reason? I think
I don't know.
We talk about accountability. We talk about someone in a very high up position. And you know what? To Ed Troyer's credit, he has said he welcomes the investigation. So we will see what it results in. She is being remembered as a Tacoma trailblazer, the first black woman on the city council and a longtime education advocate. Dr. Dolores Silas has passed away at the age of 94, and her death came just weeks after Tacoma Public Schools officially changed the name of Woodrow Wilson High School to honor her. She spoke at the ribbon-cutting ceremony on July 1st.
I'm here because of you, and I stand humbled in this recognition. At this time, I did not do anything for glory. I did it because it was the right thing to do and the right time to do it. It is not what I say to you today. It is what you say to yourself that will make the difference.
Oh, that's powerful. Her godson spoke with King Five about how she used her power and influence to find solutions to her community's problems.
In the mid to late 80s, when the Bloods and Crips moved into town, Aunt Dolores was the city council member for Hilltop.
Right.
And so she brought them in here, into her basement, into her bar,
right,
to have a drink, right, and to talk about what they needed and what she could do for them. To provide some peace with both of them side by side.
Love that. And I also love that the very end, she was able to get her flowers, as they say, while she was here, and to be honored just 2 weeks ago is incredible that this happened.
Absolutely. I love that story about how she invited the gang members to the basement of her home. She's this 5-foot powerhouse. Like, okay, you guys are going to work this out.
Right.
I love it. And I love that she says, I didn't do anything for glory. It's the right thing to do. And it's not what I say to you today. It's what you say to yourself. So true. Okay, still ahead. All sorts of things happening at the Olympics today. We're going to do a quick wrap up for you. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. It is 9:34. On this Tuesday morning, it's 68 degrees.
I don't know what's going on with me with the weather today. I'm just like, give me the 80s.
You're feeling hot.
I don't know what's going on.
You are feeling hot. Okay, so we are going to talk about the Olympics a little bit more. As you heard in Heather's newscast, Simone Biles surprised Team USA by pulling out of the team finals in Tokyo. And this was her message to her teammates before they went out and won silver.
I'm sorry. I love you guys, but you're going to be just fine. You guys have trained your whole entire life for this. It's fine. I've been to an Olympics. I'll be fine. This is your first. You go out there and kick ass, okay?
So there was a lot of speculation, a lot of confusion about why Biles decided not to compete, but she cleared that up, saying that she did not have an injury, and basically she feels like there's more to life than gymnastics.
And it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games. I think just as a whole, not having an audience, there are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year.
So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out. But we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case.
And she also pointed out to women's tennis star Naomi Osaka for the inspiration to take care of her mental health first. Osaka, for her part, was bounced out of the Olympics in the third round, and she had put the Tokyo Olympics on her calendar at the age of 14 and even lit the Olympics torch at the opening ceremonies, but she is out now. And as you know, she had made quite a bit of headlines recently for talking about mental health and the stresses of being a competitor at the level that she was in and how much stress everyone was putting on her.
Ratings are down, Ursula, 30% from 2016 until now. However, the Olympics continues to get my support. It gets me to watch it. This weekend, I watched archery. This weekend, I watched badminton. This is a time that I usually watch things that you only watch them every 4 years. For me, I have been enjoying it. Now, do I understand? Do I possibly see what these Olympians are potentially going through with no crowd, and probably their training was different this year, and the hurdles that they had to jump over just to get to where they are, and the stories? Like, look, I'm going to admit something. The stories that come out and that are about the Olympics, I promise you, it feels like every single story, this is just for me, feels like it's negative, right? Like every single story feels negative. But that's on the news side and maybe on the social media side. But when I'm watching the Olympics, like I did all weekend, when I'm watching it, I'm just flat out there on NBC and I'm in the moment, I don't get that feeling, right? Mm-hmm. I'm nerded out. I'm into the Olympics. I'm seeing the stories. I'm seeing these amazing people compete. The archery, how amazing they were. So,
well, let's talk about that. Okay, so, well, I'm glad that you're looking for the positive side on it, but I think what we need to acknowledge that there are people who are saying, look, the mental health situation is very real at this level.
Yeah.
I would imagine that, you know, given that your son competes at a very high level, that's something that you would worry about, because you have this idea that they're so strong and resilient and they can do anything, but especially the gymnastics team. I'm always conflicted when I watch the gymnastics team, because Simone Biles is nothing beyond phenomenal. I mean nothing short of beyond phenomenal. In other words, she is like an athlete at a level that very few people reach.
Right.
And for someone like her to say, man, I just can't do it. My mental health, I cannot do it. I think that's saying something.
It's saying a lot. And, you know, Ursula, I'm glad you brought up my son, because that really opened up to what I really want to talk about when it comes to this topic. And you look at Simone Biles or any other Olympic athlete and has worked, trained so hard, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know what, I think I'm done. And those things, like when it comes to my son, I'm flying out tomorrow and I'm going to fly out to Columbus, and my plan is to fly out there even more, because I think mental health, and we all believe that it's real, right? I know that my son, of course, what he's dealing with right now with the death of his mom, like, I don't take those things for granted. And so who knows? Maybe one day my son might wake up, Ursula, and say, yeah, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. So what do you do?
You need to make sure that you're okay with that and they're okay with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's important.
Okay, let's talk about the joy of the Olympics, though. Did you hear about 17-year-old Lydia Jacoby? Okay, Alaska is not exactly known as a swimming powerhouse, but she won a surprise gold medal in the 100-meter breaststroke, which used to be my event.
And then you've got Jacoby up there in lane three. Challenging Schoonmaker. We've got 10 meters left. Lydia Jacoby, the 17-year-old from Alaska, is putting on the surge of her career. And Lydia Jacoby is going to win gold for the United States.
I love that.
know. So you know her family was going to watch the Olympics as fans in 2020, but then ended up watching their daughter win the gold this year instead. Back home in Alaska, get this, it only has one Olympic-sized swimming pool. So as you can imagine, everyone there went wild.
Yeah, they're celebrating in Seward, Alaska. A watch party there at the Del Lindsay Railroad Terminal. They're packed in, cheering on the 17-year-old.
Oh. Okay, I'm just going to say that's the favorite part for me.
Yeah!
When it comes to the Olympics.
Yes! That stuff right there. 17 years old from Alaska, seeing the watch party, knowing the watch party is all cheering on for their hometown hero, and you already knowing when they get back the parade is going to be off the hook. I love stories like that, Ursula. Hey, wait. You used to do the breaststroke?
Yeah.
Wait. Time out. Hold on.
50-yard freestyle.
Full disclaimer.
Uh-huh.
Is it, I don't know this answer, is it breath stroke or
no.
breast stroke?
Breast stroke.
I didn't know.
Breast stroke.
It's called the breast stroke?
Yeah, breast stroke.
I always thought it was breath stroke.
Nope. You do have to breathe, but it's the breath. Chef is just cringing right now.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm still awash in the joy. This is the best part of the Olympics.
Yes.
Just people coming out of nowhere and having the moment of their lives in front of their entire friends, family, and country. Go Lydia.
Yes, who knew they could do that? Yeah, so what was her time? Do you know, Chef?
I do not know what her time was because I never swam the breaststroke, and so would not be able to compare my personal time.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, hang on a second. We're going to find this out real up. 104, so under 1 minute and 5 seconds. That's amazing.
So that means I do it in 5 minutes. Because I got to get my life jacket on. I got to get my floaty devices, my water wings, and I got to be able to do all that. And it's the breaststroke.
Yes, breaststroke.
All right. Yes. Hey, coming up next, apology seems to be a big deal these days because let's be real, a lot of people are messing up. Anyways, coming up next, we're going to give you three important things that you need to include in an apology. We do that next. It's Gene Erson. Is the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 10 o'clock, it will be time for the three things that you need to know at 10, and one of those being about the January 6th testimony that is happening today. But right now, we need to talk. And we need to talk about something that is simple because the celebrity apology is, if you will, having a moment with famous person after famous person apologizing for things. When you think of an apology, you think about Chrissy Teigen, who is like the number one apologist. Like she has an apology every single week. Chrissy Teigen, John Legend's my wife. And so that's what's starting to happen. So why have so many of us found these social media scandals or apologies so compelling? Well, it all comes down to a few things. And so what we're going to talk about is that these apologies, Chrissy Teigen's, some of these apologies are so tone deaf, so long, so ridiculous. So Ursula, I'm going to keep it simple. It boils down to addressing three essential things. Simply put, issuing an effective apology comes down to recognizing your mistake, taking ownership of that mistake, and genuinely sharing your remorse to the audience that need to hear it most. Ursula, those are the three things, and I could give you
that's
some other things.
That's hardly revolutionary, though. I mean, that's there's nothing new with that. You brought up Chrissy Teigen. Chrissy Teigen is in this situation because she was basically, she had a huge following. So you talked to her about her as John Lennon's wife, but she was a name in her own right, former supermodel. And then she has this huge social media following, but she used it, as we've turned out to find out, that her lack of a filter, she would use it to attack people even privately.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did a lot of damage. She hurt people, even though a lot of people were saying they really liked her and liked what she said. she was hurting a lot of people to the point where some people were thinking of harming themselves, and she was doing damage to other people who she called, you know, B or C level celebrities, whatever it is. And in any case, so her apologies are falling on deaf ears to the most part, because this is someone who every day is making an apology. It doesn't feel sincere. And it's also because she's finally, in her words, been canceled, when she would often talk about cancel culture.
Well, you said it's simple, though, Ursula.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, in those things, again, those three things are recognizing the mistake, taking ownership, and genuinely sharing your remorse to the audiences. In those apologies, one of the key mistakes that this article talks about is things like, don't say, I'm sorry you felt that way.
Exactly.
Or make sure you center the person or group you hurt in your apology. Avoid coming across as self-serving. And lastly, and this is important, when you do give that apology, it talks about, it says, don't assume an apology will automatically win back good standing with the public.
And that leads us to the next conversation that we need to have, which is, yes, you have to do the right kind of apology, but how about learning how to forgive as well? We never talk about that part. And I think that's something that Chef and I were talking about right before this segment. But it's one thing to craft an apology, and it has to be sincere. And like, you're right, so many times people say, well, if I hurt your feelings, I didn't mean to do that. Or I didn't intend. No, how about, I should not have done that. I hear you. I hear how this has impacted you. And I was wrong. And I am truly remorseful. And I need to do better. Please help me. I am going to work on it. And be sincere. Right? Not just, you know, putting together these semantics that take some of the edge off, but don't really feel like an apology and will leave the other person unfulfilled. But what about that whole idea of forgiving? How do you forgive?
I don't know, but it ain't on you to forgive. It's but about I the apology, it, not the forgiveness.
See, I think that forgiveness is a huge part of it, and the reason why so many people cannot move on.
It's subjective, right? Like, everybody has levels to it. You have levels of forgiveness in which you'll go, Chef has his own threshold, and I have mine. Mm-hmm. Everyone has different thresholds of forgiveness. For an example, if someone goes out and cheats on you, do you take that person back? Well, everybody doesn't say, oh, get rid of that person. Sometimes you work through it, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But forgiveness is subjective.
I think that the goal of an apology is healing. And you can never, if it's a sincere, well-meaning apology. And I don't think you can have healing for both parties until there's forgiveness. And I think that forgiveness is a skill that you have to work on. And it is not something that we are taught in society. And if you have ever been forgiven, you know how amazing that grace feels. I would love for our society to focus more on teaching people how to forgive. Because you can't heal if you were wronged until you let go and forgive.
100%. And that is something that I have been on the receiving end of forgiveness. I have made a mistake recently where a friend said, I forgive you, let's move on. And I have also been one to forgive, maybe too easily, but you know what? It helps me move on too.
Hey, coming up next, it's time for three things that you need to know at 10, including testimony from the January 6th hearing that's happening right now. It's Gene Ursula.